from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made at Coral Reef Senior High School in Miami. That's where a veteran teacher named Stephanie Woolley Larrera is standing in a corner in front of a computer, addressing students in her classroom and also the students watching her remotely. Woolley Larrera was in her 26th year of teaching as she told CBS News, quote, "I've learned more this year than I have since my first year teaching. It was transformative," end quote. Woolley Larrera is one of millions of teachers in the U.S. who had to learn new technologies and adapt to new modes of teaching due to the pandemic. She echoes a sentiment that many teachers, including those in our region, have, that the pandemic was a time to reinvent the profession, to reinvent what their goals are and what student goals ought to be. And while reinventing modes of learning was beneficial for many educators and students, it didn't come without its drawbacks. A study by the RAND Corporation in January showed that 78% of teachers surveyed said they experienced frequent job-related stress, a lot more than normal, as compared to 40% of employed adults. The study also indicated that the challenges of hybrid learning led to the most stress. In fact, 1 in 4 teachers surveyed said they were likely to leave their jobs by the end of the school year if they can. This hour, we continue with our series of conversations with local teachers about lessons learned during the pandemic. What are the challenges they have faced, the successes they've had, maybe some of the revelations they've had, and I'm also curious how they feel about what's about to happen in about a month as we go back to school. Welcome in studio, Susan Spencer, a 7th grade teacher at Academy of Health Sciences Charter School. Susan, welcome back to the program.
Nice to be here, Evan.
Also with us is Dina Strasser, who is an ENL teacher at Midlakes. Welcome. You're laughing.
ENL.
I got all the acronyms wrong. ENL stands for?
English as a New Language.
English as a New Language. Wonderful. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
On the line with us is Stephan Cohen, Director of the Career and Teaching Program at the Rochester City School District. Hello, Stephan.
Hi. Good to be back.
And Kristen French, a speech language pathologist at the Rochester City School District. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Let me ask all four of you right out of the gate. Susan Spencer, hardest year of your career, most rewarding, worst, wouldn't want to do it again? I mean, how do you feel about the last year and a half?
If I were to give it a superlative, I would use most informative year of my life.
I thought you were going to do something that caused us to use the delay. So I thought maybe an expletive was coming. Most informative.
I would never.
You would never.
Most informative.
Why most informative?
I think it, flaws in the education system that many people had known about were exposed to a much wider array of people. I think that the understanding of the teaching profession became much more widespread about what we do when we are on the job and how many roles we actually fill. I felt it informed me about who I want to be as a teacher, and it informed, I think, where the education system has been failing for the last 50 years.
What's one example?
An example would be that some people believe that COVID is a hoax, and that's the result of 50 years of a lack of scientific education and education and critical thinking in America. We are where we are because people are refusing to mask. We may, the trouble with reopening schools or bars or restaurants, or we are making this trouble. It's very easy to put a mask on. And the fact that there's a significant portion of Americans who don't shows me that the rot in the education system certainly did not start with this generation. And I think we can trace it quite far back based on the age demographics of the people who are refusing to mask.
Mostly the kids' parents, right?
That's correct. And grandparents.
Okay. Dina, is there a term that comes to mind to you? Get right on your microphone for me.
I like transformative.
Yeah.
I really do. I like it because it's not, it doesn't attach itself to either negative or positive values. And so much about this year was negative, and yet so much about this year was also positive. I find almost that in order to have a transformative experience, you need to have both. So that's where I'm at.
Hardest part of the last year, year and a half?
Fear, definitely fear. Fear for me, fear for my students, and them staying well, really. Ultimately, it was easy for me to let, I guess, I don't know what this says about me as an educator, but it was easy for me to let go of educational objectives when I had to.
Boy, we've heard a lot of that already from teachers this summer, talking about maybe having a chance to reset how we feel about testing, our addiction to standardized testing, how we evaluate students to begin with.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, because I'm an E&L teacher, the profession has to use multiple methods of assessment in order to figure out where a kid is in terms of learning languages anyway. So there was almost, for me, there was almost a match between where I was intuitively and naturally as a person and as an educator and what I ended up having to do as a pandemic educator as well.
Wow. Let's ask Stefan and Kristen about that. Stefan, is there a word that comes to mind for you?
Maybe the most surreal.
Yeah.
I hope transformative. I mean, one of the things that in the conversations I've been having with a lot of teachers, a lot of colleagues, is about the hopes that we'll be able to take some of the things that we've learned through this, through very, you know, very trying circumstances, and take it integrate it into our practice so that that things that we've learned to value, things that we've discovered are really the essential priorities for the work, become the essential priorities for the work, as opposed to an afterthought following kind of compliance-based issues. That compliance-based approach hasn't really served our students very well. And I think pulling back the curtain, as the pandemic did, really helps illustrate that. And it's not just the pandemic. You know, let's not forget that following the murder of George Floyd, Daniel Prude, we've had a racial reckoning, a new awareness of the impact of these of societal inequities on our students and their families. And then in the Rochester City School District, right before that happened, you know, we laid off a whole bunch of folks. So our district's been through a lot, our teachers have been through a lot, and our students and our families have been through a lot. And you know, the hope is that we'll be able to take some of what we've learned and use it to bring back into the classroom in a robust way to reinvigorate our practice and really get to what's most important for our kids and their families.
Describe a little bit of what you do as the director of the Career in Training Career in Teaching program, Stefan.
We are a mentor intern program. We all new teachers who enter the Rochester City School District are assigned a lead teacher mentor who provides them with comprehensive, customized support throughout their first year of teaching. So we have experienced teachers who are vetted and selected and then assigned, and they work alongside the new teachers and also assistant teachers who request professional support. And for our new teachers, these mentors also have a say in whether those teachers continue in the profession alongside the teacher supervisor. So it's a peer assistance review program. But mainly 90% of what our mentors do is support. And that issued its own challenges because all of a sudden we were all out of our comforts. We were all at the beginning. We had to all start from scratch. Our most experienced, confident teachers were beginners again and were learning alongside the newest teachers that they were assigned to support. So that offered its own set of challenges as well.
Kristen French, is there a word that comes to mind for you?
I would say tiring and stressful. I just feel like every day I woke up with like a sense of urgency and like, what will the news be that day? How are we supposed to implement instruction that particular day? Who's going to show up? So I would say tiring and stressful are two words. And it's actually, there's a mix also, because in a way the staff and students and the families that we were able to connect with, there was like a deeper connection going on. Mm-hmm. So there are some positives of it all, but generally speaking, there was a lot of stress, and it took a physical and emotional toll on the families and the students and the staff as a whole.
And Kristen, sort of building on that point, let me tell you where my assumption is, and tell me if I'm wrong, because not being a teacher, one of the things certainly that we are all learning, those of us who have had to even be part of helping with kids who are trying to get learning done is that teachers not paid enough. We've known that, but it's really, really true now. Teachers probably are exhausted, as you said. I would think also that when you are engaging, as you said, engaging with kids and families or guardians who are involved, it can be really effective and beautiful and helpful. But it's probably the case where on a day-to-day basis, in a normal, like I say normal, pre-pandemic classroom, there's always kids who have more involved families, a little more structural support at home, and then kids who don't. And that is exacerbated when there's a pandemic. So as good as you might feel when kids are really clicking, even with Zoom lessons or anything else that you have to do remotely, you're probably in the back of your mind thinking, this other student I haven't even seen in days. I have no idea what's going on in their lives. I mean, like, it's got to be heartbreaking to even think about what kids have been going through in the last year and a half.
Yeah, definitely. It was difficult to look at the roster each day when you look at attendance and the kids like day after day or that particular period and having to mark them absent because you just wanted to hear from them. You just wanted to see them. Remarkably, there are a lot of educators did a wonderful job being very accessible all the time, like from the moment we woke up to even when we went to bed, like through emails and text messages and everything. So there were times the attendance record might not reflect exactly how it is, but we were able to make contact with a lot of the families, even though maybe they weren't present for an academic course or what have you.
So we're talking to four teachers and part of our series of conversations with teachers this summer as we get ready to get back to school here. And so let's talk about maybe finding ways to make permanent the change that you'd like to see. So Susan Spencer, let me start with you on this. We're 4 weeks away from school being back. Most districts that we're talking to are planning to be back 5 days in person with very few exceptions. And on one hand, when there's a crisis, there's a desire to get back to normal because you feel like you're past the crisis. Also, normal is comfortable. Typical is comfortable. But typical didn't work for everybody. And so this is a chance to say, yes, we want to get through the pandemic as well we can. We're not through it yet. It's not over. And we want to feel as comfortable as we can. But there's some changes that should be made. We shouldn't just go back fully to where we were before. And if we do, it'll be a missed opportunity. Where would it be a missed opportunity? And where do you see an opportunity to change that?
I think that I would pick three things. And the first, I think, has to do with the ongoing racial reckoning that was brought up by another guest. We are living in the most segregated state in the nation in terms of our schools. We have a largely white administrative class overseeing the direction and supervision of young Black and Hispanic men and women with little or no training in things like critical race theory or becoming culturally competent. I think removing more of the bloat that has, you know, teachers just bypassed the entire time that we were teaching because it was us on Zoom with the kids. Administrators weren't walking into your room, you know. So, you know, getting things out of our way as teachers, I think we need to keep doing that because we know what we need to do. We know that we need to educate kids and we know that we need to provide as many pathways as possible for them. So that's number one. Number two, I think that mental health and the care and support of the student and their family holistically needs to continue. You know, everyone knows our stats regarding childhood poverty here in Rochester. Mm-hmm. It's not, you've had it on your show many times. Mm-hmm. And the type of wraparound support that we began to provide during the pandemic, it shouldn't stop. You know, it's not like before the pandemic, we were a model of educational excellence and success here in Rochester. We were not. And I say that with so much love for everyone who is trying, you know. But a return to a normal that was neither beneficial to the children, to the families, to the teachers, to the taxpayers, seems nonsensical to me. I think finally we need to let the data inform us going forward. And the reason why I bring that up is that a lot of times, you know, we think about testing data or we think about SATs. And these are, you know, Dr. Kendi described them as implicitly racist ways to assess intelligence. We need to have new types of data collection and aggregation that look at the student as a whole person, as an individual, and think about how we can get them into their truest, happiest adult self, and really just back away from a lot of these tropes that have just been proven false.
Throw out some of the standard tests.
Yes. My alma mater, RIT, where I earned both my bachelor's and my PhD from, is no longer doing SAT testing. You don't need it anymore.
They don't utilize it.
No. And why would they? It's one of the most inaccurate measures of intelligence I can think of.
Dina Strasser, let's talk about where you see opportunities to make sure we don't just fall back into some things that you think ought to have changed.
Yeah. Well, to
and get rid of them, grab that microphone. I'm going to keep. I don't like yelling at teachers, but I will do it.
To piggyback on what you were saying, schools were not designed for children. I was talking with Shauna Sweet, who is one of the PD specialists at Arburn. I don't know if you know what Arburn is. It's an acronym. Hold on. It's a regional educational. Bilingual, and I can't find it. Anyway, there's 8 of them in the state, and their purpose is to help teachers, students, families, and other, other folks in the educational system, specifically to support our bilingual kids. And one of the books she was reading and recommended to me was about the history of education in America. And she referred me to something called the Committee of Ten. I don't know if you've heard of this. You have. Yes. The Committee of Ten was 10 white men who met in 1892 in Saratoga Springs, New York. So we have the honor of carrying
shout out
this.
To Saratoga Springs.
Yep. Albany, born and bred here. And they essentially decided what education was to look like normatively in the United States. Whether we should be teaching kids the same things was a question that they answered. The schedule, the 180 days that was such an issue when it came to the pandemic, and how are we going to meet 180 days, and how are we going to get the
it's like this arbitrary thing. That's where it came from, huh?
Yeah.
We're not from farming anymore. Yeah. And that's by and large.
Yeah. And that's that's a great synopsis. Essentially, right, we are being held hostage to a system that was developed by 10 white men over 100 years ago. Just as a point of reflection as well, Piaget, I don't know if you've heard of Piaget. Piaget, amazing fundamental school psychologist. He was born in 1896. And these folks were meeting in 1892. So Piaget was 4 when these 10 men met. And so they had no sense of what children needed or wanted. And we are still operating within that system. So the pandemic sort of acted, what I've been saying is that the pandemic sort of acted as a contrast die. Mm. You dump it into the system and it shows you what's already broken. So on the flip side, however, it shows you what's broken, but it can also show you what potentially could be fixed. And so one of the things that I would suggest, which may seem simplistic, but I think it might be a great place to start for some folks who might be feeling overwhelmed with how to make these changes, is our schedule. Plain and simple. What does our schedule look like over the year? What does it look like over the day?
Well, you're in charge now. So
I
10
am.
White men, it's you. What's the schedule going to look like? What's it going to be?
Well, I mean, she can rely on data that adolescents need anywhere between 12 to 15 hours of sleep for proper brain growth and development.
Yeah, and I think...
And they're not getting that, right?
No, and I think just before the pandemic, correct me if I'm wrong, Webster's school district was experimenting with schedules just for that, to address what adolescents in particular needed in terms of sleep. I don't know where that stands right now. I'd love to know if anyone out there in Radioland knows. You could call in.
So you're saying it's a later start to the school day?
Potentially, yes.
Okay. And what about 180 days? What about all that stuff?
There's a lot of research around summer slide, which is this huge 2-month summer-based agrarian
yeah.
space where kids get off for the summer, but originally it was intended so that they could go back to their farms and help their families yeah. harvest food. We don't need to do that anymore. So let's find a way in which kids can take lengthy breaks in which to get the socio-emotional sort of, you know, restart that they need that doesn't cause them to step out of education for months at a time. Just one example.
One that, if the kids vote, may not be as popular. But but you know what, though? Maybe it would be more popular than I think. When you talk about building in regular breaks, and when you talk about later starts to the day, when you talk about less high-pressure, high-stakes testing that doesn't have good data to back up, I mean, maybe there is actually a lot more pull.
I think you'd be surprised by how the kids would feel. And if any of my students are listening, call in.
Doesn't RIT operate on quarters, right?
So we used to operate on quarters. I graduated from that system. And I you know, the idea of these breaks and the socio-emotional component of learning is something that is just, it's not mandatory in curriculums. You know, the kids have to, they have to meet state metrics and get their regents, and that's that. There's, it's ridiculous.
So let me turn to Stefan and Kristen. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, really, Susan and Dina giving us a picture that reminds us if we were creating a system from scratch right now, it may not look very much like how we do school. And a lot of that's tied to a system that was created long time ago when the world was very, very different, and we've mostly adhered to that anyway. So Stefan Cohen, what's the opportunity as you see, what's the open door that you want to see us go through and not just slide back to where we were pre-pandemic?
So there are lots of great models for some of there are alternative models out there. Many of them public school districts that have experimented with all kinds of calendars and all kinds of configurations. I think the thing that remains constant, whatever your calendar structure is, whatever your school day structure is in the wake of the pandemic, is what truly matters in learning, what truly matters to develop our kids into independent, strong, and healthy and wise growing learners. And to me, the questions that we've been talking about have been less about the logistics and the structure of the day, although I know most of my colleagues are open to all kinds of ideas, especially around the amount of sleep that our students are getting. But when it comes down to it, what our teachers have shared that really matters most, that many of them reported that they just didn't quite realize how much it mattered. Words keep coming up like connections, like and as much as I wish they were talking about your program, Evan, I think what they're talking about is connections to their students and to their families, building relationships with their families, that they didn't realize just how important it is, just that students are going to have a hard time engaging in an active independent learning process unless basic needs are met, unless they feel that the teacher is engaging with them as a whole person, whether or not they're struggling with either mental health or other kinds of grieving or trauma, or if they're not, that there is that connection there, that a strong relationship is established, that they need to listen to their students more, that they need to step back and decide whether what they're doing in their classrooms is relevant and important, and if there's a purpose to what they're doing, or are they just going through the motions? These are the kinds of things that the pandemic revealed to a lot of folks, because we had a lot of time, we did a lot of reflecting. We didn't always get the opportunity to talk about it to the degree that I would have liked, but the reflections there and some of the insights are there around just how important it is to make connections with students and their families before any learning is going to take place.
I would argue that by and large, teachers do know that, and teachers go out of their way to do that all day, every single day, which is one of the reasons why we're underpaid and exhausted. Administrators, however, struggle providing teachers the time, the money, the support for home visits, to make sure that basic needs are being met, to make sure that there are enough social workers at the school. So I guess I would push back and say that that's, at least for me, that's just teaching everything that you described. Maybe it isn't for you, but...
No, it is. The difference is that the difference is that when you take away the classroom, when you take away all the trappings, when you take away the students walking into your room ready to receive, you know, whatever the teacher's doling out. You know, I'm a teacher as well. This is a teacher-led program. All the mentors in our district are teacher. Almost all of them are full-time teachers. I guess what I'm sharing is that these experienced folks were kind of real. I guess that the need for those connections with kids and their homes and their personal lives was really reinvigorated by the fact that that had to be taken care of first before we start talking about a particular lesson content.
Sure.
That you've got to work with a family, even if it's, you know, I had teachers who worked 2 to 3 hours to help the family get their Zoom platform up, to help establish a Wi-Fi connection. We had teachers, colleagues who delivered things to people's houses, to their front doors, arranged for pickups at the school to pick up supplies for labs. And I should add here too, as in addition to being a teacher in the district, I'm also my daughter just graduated, so I'm also a district parent, and what the efforts that many of the teachers made to, whether we're talking mentor teachers, some of our newer teachers were really dynamic and creative in the way they reached out to families. But I do think that if anyone was complacent about the essential value of those connections and those relationships, that any doubt that anyone might have had has been wiped out by what's happened in the last year and a half.
Yeah, and right. And so I think it sounds to me like that's where you and Susan agree. And I think what I'm hearing from Susan, correct me if I'm wrong, Susan, Stefan, is that it's one thing to really have the opportunity to see that importance crystallize for you. It's another to say, going forward, we've got the support from administration, we've got the time, we've got enough staff, we have enough everything
right
that says we can keep doing that, pandemic or not. Is that
right?
Is that
and
fair?
That, okay. And that's where the work will be to, and you know, what I'm sharing with you is coming out of the mouths of mentor teachers and new teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they want is they want to see that baked into into as plans are laid out,
yeah,
as we return, to make sure that that remains an essential component of what we do. And yeah, we will need time and resources to do that. And I think generally there's a recognition in the Rochester City School District from district leadership that that's needed. And now we'll keep pushing to make sure that, you know, that we see it, that it actually takes, that it actually gets there.
All right, Kristen French, what about you? Mm-hmm. Where are the changes going to be made?
The Rochester City School District is in a very unique situation right now, and we have an opportunity to spend the funds that we have been given federally and by the state. And so I'm thinking like the immediate, like right now, what can we do that our students don't have? And one thing definitely that needs to be done is just thinking about the school climate and investing directly into social workers and counselors and our restorative team, expanding that. And there has been talk of having all staff be responsible for social emotional learning and the well-being of our students, and I truly believe that. But the reality is we also need direct investment in human resources into our social workers and our counselors. And as I mentioned, the ROC restorative team, that's really important. It was important before, and it's important right now after struggling with this global pandemic and all the layers of trauma that's been going on for our students and our families and our community as a whole. As you know, like our Rochester is like one of the third impoverished cities in our country. So
for a city that says, yeah.
And we have unique needs here in our city that are not happening in the suburbs or even compared to a lot of charter schools. So definitely school climate. And then looking at our schools, they're all very different. And having equity across different buildings, different programs should be available across all schools, and the special education needs of students. They should be addressed at all different schools, so there's less transition going on. That should be an investment, something that we can do this coming school year, like right now. And another piece would be really investing in culturally responsive curriculum and like fostering anti-racist and anti-bias educators, and having a lot of professional development about that, and really making it a priority this year, and continuing it, not just have some sort of program and start it for 1 to 2 or 3 years and then drop it, but really make an intentional investment in it.
Do you think your administration is committed to not only trying to bring sort of some sense of normalcy to education that I guess pre-pandemic sort of feel, but also opening the door to permanent changes like you want to see, Kristen?
Let's see. How can I word this? Let's see. I think it's talked about. I have seen it in writing. I'd like to see more action, though. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we can do right now. We have almost $400 million that we get to spend over the next 3 years. And we can make an intentional investment in our students. And there are ways that we can do it. And so I believe there's an administration out there that would agree with what I just said. But I really will believe it when I see it.
I've got to get our only break in. And when I come back, we have a lot of phone calls from all four of our guests have sparked some real passionate response from listeners. We'll get as many calls as we can in before the end of the hour. And we're going to come back with Susan Spencer, Dina Strasser, Kristen French, Stephen Cohen, all giving us their perspective as teachers who have worked so hard. And I think, frankly, I don't like using this word too often, but it is damn near heroic what teachers have been able to do during this pandemic. But the question that they're asking us is, do you really want to just go back to where we were before? Or do you want to move forward and take what we've learned and make some real permanent change here? And that's what we're talking about. We'll get your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, a chance for us to bring back a recent show to give you ideas on composting. One of the most popular shows we have done in a long time. Voices of the experts answering your questions on what is compostable at home, how to do that, how to get involved in new municipal programs that are happening in Rochester and elsewhere. That's Monday on Connections.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me get Anthony in Rochester first on the phone. Hi, Anthony. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. So, you know, I'm just listening about scheduling and, you know, what changes we could be making in our district. I'm a teacher in the district, and I see, you know, we've all been through this massive year of just change this year, this shock. And at this time, I feel like we have this opportunity to instate changes. Like, for example, we have so many studies over the years of, you know, let's start a little bit later. The kids need more sleep. The kids will do better. The kids, you know, I teach at 7:30 in the morning, and I have, you know, kids half asleep on a regular day. And then mm-hmm. we tried remote, and most of the kids didn't show up because they were still sleeping. Mm-hmm. So something like that, the opportunity for, you know, the 4-day week that we've seen across the country. I think Colorado was a district that it's been somewhat successful in. Just something radical. I mean, our district isn't working. I think everybody has some agreement on that, the way that it's going. And I feel like we're just missing the opportunity as we go back to what is looking like a full 5-day, you know, school week starting regular times. And then something Kristen said that I just wanted to add on about, you know, just equity in the district. You know, why do we have such failing schools and we have such successful schools? Why can't we take the SOTA model or the EAST model and expand it? Why don't we have a second SOTA or a second EAST? And, you know, now it's just
the time for the opportunity that we have to make big change. And I'm really just, I don't think it's going to happen unless we have a community start to push back a little bit.
Anthony, thank you. And, you know, I think Anthony's concern that we're going to miss this moment is echoed by a lot of people. Just briefly, with the Rochester teachers on here, do you think that those models that he cited, SOTA, EAST, et cetera, could travel? Should more happen here?
I think that those models and many other successful ones are what we should be looking towards. And I agree with Anthony's concern and with Kristen's hesitation earlier regarding whether or not anything will happen, because, you know, it's much cheaper to go back to the way it was. It's easier. It's simpler. And if we don't have a critical mass of students, teachers, families, pulling ourselves together and really saying, stop, we're doing it different now. It won't change, and I don't think administrations will move unless they are moved.
Kristen, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Anthony's comments and that something needs to change. We should have all of our schools should be equity, and we need to continue to attract families to our district, or there's going to be declining enrollment, and we're losing students to charter schools, and it's happening. And if this continues to happen, it makes our district unstable, and that means closing of more schools, and it the privatization of public education is really harmful. So if we don't find ways to attract students and keep them at the RCSD, we're going to lose students, and that's a huge threat to public education. So we do need equity, and we do need vibrant programs at schools and extracurricular activities and extended day and all these different opportunities across all the different schools and not just some of them.
Yeah. Stephen Cohen, what do you think?
Any changes that will better engage families and are positive, and the logistical hurdles are significant. But if there's a vision and there's consensus around that vision, there are plenty of models to look at for how to get it done. It's a matter of vision and commitment. I'll say on a more individual classroom level that. That what doesn't change is what you as a teacher do with the opportunities that you have to bring the lessons and the insights of this last year and a half into what you do every day. And if that means cutting back on the volume of content you feel pressured to deliver in order to make sure that you're allowing for the kind of connections to your students and families that will promote their learning, then that's what you need to do. And I have to say also that despite kind of the struggles of our district, the optimism of the teachers working within it to be able to do more for their students has been pretty powerful to me in the last year and a half. If I can share just one thing, I asked our mentors, these are some of our more experienced teachers last May, about, given the unprecedented challenges, which, you know, what captures your sense of resilience as we wind down the school year? And this was back in May. And 24% said that working through these challenges has made their practice stronger than ever. 55% said they feel resilient and they're reasonably optimistic for what's ahead. And 18% said I made it to today, and that's enough said. But it's the possibilities are as expansive and as limited as our vision and commitment to carrying them out. We have a lot of logistical challenges in shifting the district in wholesale ways structurally. But within the smaller learning communities that exist within that district, the sky's the limit.
So, Dean Strasser, Anthony also referenced, for example, teaching at 7:30 and having students half asleep, right?
Yeah.
And you talked about the calendar. But what would you say? I mean, I got an email from a listener who says, then put your kids to bed earlier. What do you say to that?
I'd say look at some of the research on how adolescent brains actually work, but that's actually...
No, say that. I mean, if that's the point, then people probably should understand the position is that our brains and clocks aren't functioning that way.
Right. And I empathize with that listener. Sounds like they're a parent of a teen.
Yeah, probably.
And
so.
And so am I. You know, I've got a 16 and an 18-year-old at home. And so what I would drill down into in that question is, where does the listener believe that personal responsibility is the end-all and be-all of the question? So let me talk about that a little bit more. It sounds as if, and I'm just speaking from the words that you've given me,
yeah,
that this person is saying, if the parent is doing their job correctly, there will be no problems. And I worry about that. I worry about looking at the solutions of education, but also the pandemic and how those things intersect, as an individual problem that is individually solved. And to expand out on that a little bit more, this is also why I'm concerned about questions and conversations around school systems serving to take up the slack in social safety nets that are utterly lacking in this country. And so there's a savior mythology around teachers in schools. And we come by it honestly, because teachers in schools schools and systems are filled with caring, loving, smart people who just want to take care of the students in front of them, right? And yet, what's really needed is some deep, deep work that is intersecting with more robust safety nets, as opposed to expecting schools and teachers to solve those problems individually. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think you want to add to that, Susan?
Yeah, I think also the parent of a 20-year-old, so former teenager. She's definitely not listening, because you know how they are. But even just thinking about my students, many of them work 20 or 30 hours a week, saving up money for college.
Right.
Many of them have babysitting responsibilities. You know, it's very simple to say, put your kid to bed earlier, but then they are taking 5 AP courses, which can have as many as 5 to 6 hours of homework a night. You know, we
what about extracurriculars?
Right. Time is a construct, but we still work with only 24 hours of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's unreasonable to just consider, as my colleague said, to consider just put them to bed earlier. No, there's no one solution, because there's not one problem. There are thousands and thousands of small and major things that will require the collective action of individuals and their input.
Mary in Rochester. Next time, Mary, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to start just by framing what I have to say by recounting that in the 80s, when I was a school principal, I used to put up a picture of a medieval cathedral and tell people that each of us, when we read the Daily New York Times, interacted with more information in a day than people who lived then did in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason I say that as the frame is that I am deeply aware of the research about effective teaching and learning, and I completely support all of the suggestions that the guests have made today. They are all come out of the literature. What we are missing is time for our professionals to stay up to date with all of the research.
Mm-hmm.
We have we know how to do this. We know social emotional learning is important. We know about how to teach critical thinking. But when I started teaching in the 70s, I was
Are you there, Mary? Oh, boy. Mary, we lost you. Sorry about that, but we've got a lot out of Mary. And Mary's essentially saying, number one, you heard her comments about sort of what the literature and what teachers don't have is time. And, you know, the schedule for students and teachers was designed at a time when teachers held a teacher's manual in their hands, and critical thinking can't be done just with a handbook. So that's Mary's point. I'll ask all of four of our guests. Dina, what do you think?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I'm thinking now of models of education in Finland, where students and teachers are together for far, far less time than they are in America. And in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the amount of time that teachers spend in personal in professional development outstrips the amount of time that they're actually face to face with kids. And students in Finland do beautifully.
I think there's models, there's similar research about that in Singapore, Japan.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, you could argue that that's an apples and oranges comparison when you're comparing across countries. But I think the ultimate message is that, yeah, absolutely, teachers need simply more access, more time to get in front of the information.
Okay. Stefan, anything you want to add to that first?
Well, it's just that the kind of professional development that it's not just about seat time is kind of a term that's been problematic for, I think, a long time. If there were any doubts about the flaws in using seat time as the measure of educational success, I think if there was any last vestiges of have been removed for anyone who thinks that's what education ought to be. And you know, as a parent, I think there is a task completion oriented feel to a lot of our education system. What we've spent a lot of time talking about mentors with new teachers is to get to what is really important for a student. There's something to engage with, to shape their mind, the kind of critical thinking skills your caller mentioned, that is what is lasting, that is what's meaningful about education. And what that does require is time to learn, time to experiment, time to collaborate, and opportunities also to try stuff and fail and fix it and work on it and see if you can improve it and then try it again and see if you have better, if it works better, and if not, discard it for something that might work better. Professional growth, that kind of professional experimentation, that does require hours, and that would require some structural changes in the way we approach our school week and day.
Yep. Kristen, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to add to that that during remote learning, we on Wednesdays, the Rochester City School District, we were asynchronous, and so the district did do a great job with that. We set aside time to interact with one another as teams at schools, and invested in some professional development and across grade levels. And we were reflecting recently, it's like, what are we going to do without those Wednesdays? And just like as educators, we naturally want to collaborate with one another and share ideas and lessons and ask questions. And we're not going to have that. And we need to intentionally like build that back in. And a lot of the learning happens like after school and on the weekends in front of a computer. So I agree with Mary's idea.
Yeah. Susan Spencer.
I agree completely.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. I think, you know, Mary, I wish that the call hadn't hung up, but, you know, Stephen brought up a critical analysis and critical thinking again. And, you know, where we are right now with the anti-science movement is a result of decades and decades of deprioritizing critical thinking as a skill to be taught and instead prioritizing rote memorization. Are you speaking correctly? Do you know what a verb and a noun is? Sorry to my English teachers out there. but really, like, there are things that have to be taught by people who know how to teach them, and we need to be given that time to work with each other and become better. Once again, I would say that obstacles that are in the way of teachers, which are most often administrators, need to be gotten out of the way.
Oh, I've got to squeeze in one more call. Emily in Rochester. Go ahead, Emily.
Oh, hi. And amen to Mary, too. I think it's a huge issue that we don't take good enough care of our teachers. But I wanted to talk about what our families can do to help push the administration in the right direction. One example I would offer is our family, since my son was in kindergarten, it was very clear that he needed more time outside and classroom learning was really difficult for him. So we took him one day a week for forest school and worked to keep our relationship strong in the school and said, we know that this isn't really a thing, but we're just going to make it a thing. And I wonder what the panel feels about that approach with the schools and the teachers. You know, my top priority is a good relationship with the teacher. because that is who my child is going to rely on most and experience the school through the most. But as long as that is intact, being able to say, hey, the district or the school isn't able to meet my child's need here. I can meet this need. How do we work together to do that? And then maybe we can provide an avenue for other families that are in the same situation.
Yeah, great question. Down to our last 2 minutes. We'll go 30 seconds apiece. Emily's situation was one in which the creativity of the pandemic gave her some flexibility to design a schedule that made more sense for her kids. Now she's worried about maybe we're going to lose that, and how do we push the administration to make some of the changes you're talking about? What do you want families to do?
I want families to keep doing what they are doing. You know, I don't want our students, the children that we teach, the families that we serve, to be lost in all of this. They have been my inspiration, my hope, and my everything through this pandemic are the kids and their families. And they deserve as much credit as the teachers are getting. And I think that, you know, tight bond between teachers and families is something that needs to continue, needs to be fostered, and needs to be supported, once again, with time and with money.
Got to keep it tight. Dina, go ahead.
Yeah. As an E&L teacher, I'm working with families who may be coming from other countries or who speak different languages. And so I'd have two messages. One to the families that I work with who are nothing short of heroic. I mean, imagine trying to get through this pandemic not speaking English. Just imagine that. What I would say to those families is keep doing what you're doing. Be brave. Be a squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. Number one. And number two, and this is something that my home district, Mid-Lakes, is making really positive strides in, is get people into our system who speak those languages, in particular Spanish.
Okay, Kristen, real tight. Go ahead.
Yep. Families' voices are very important and powerful. So speaking up, and the district needs to intentionally reach out to families that, like, surveys and webinars are not going to reach out to them. So the district's going to have to go into the communities and maybe knock on doors to get their voices heard. But for families to realize their voice is very important.
That's so important. Some of the responses to these surveys are self-selecting. That Kristen's making such a good point. Stefan, if you can do it in 15 seconds, do it. Go.
Support every creative effort to make school a more engaging experience for kids. Speak up for those programs and people that make that happen, and push for more people to do it like it.
Well, this could be a year of change, and there's a lot that I'm very curious to see if it happens or if it doesn't. Stay in touch with all of us. I want to thank Susan Spencer, Dina Strasser, Stefan Cohen, Kristen French. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
Teachers,
very much.
Thank you, Evan.
Teachers doing outstanding work. From Rob Braden, Megan Mack, Emma Ray Stein, Evan Dawson saying, have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.